Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the ADVFN Podcast, episode 266. On the podcast today, Rodney Hobson, financial speaker, writer, and author of investment books, including Shares Made Simple, A Beginner's Guide to the Stock Market, talks about Legal & General, London Stock Exchange Group, Standard & Chartered, Forexpo, and Ryanair, plus have the micro macro news and the broker forecast. And this podcast is dedicated to Gordo Smith, who gave me 5-star rating and a cracking review on iTunes, which I'll read out at the end of the podcast. Gordo, thanks very much. Much appreciatos. But first, I received another email from David Whitby, CEO of SEB or CEB Resources. And this is it. Good morning, Justin. Wanted to say thanks once again for your latest podcast, a CEB Resource special, a ripper of a title and a podcast. Much appreciated. Today is day 65 of the 100 days. I happen to be back home in Amsterdam celebrating our 34th wedding anniversary, which, given the industry I'm in and our nomadic lifestyle in these past 2 decades, every anniversary is a milestone for sure, as my industry is notorious for broken marriages. I feel I'm one of the lucky ones. Things are progressing as expected. The 100 days is a good strategy to keep the boys in the band on their toes and working their prickles off. We have a number of balls in the air at the time. Some have come in closer to fruition than others. I am focusing on building a balanced portfolio of assets, not just a one-hit wonder, to give a sustainable number of quality pressable events. I like to view assets in terms of value proposition and look for assets that cover the 3 value components: a value that can be optimized, i.e. wells to be rejuvenated, value to be realized, i.e. by past pay or step outs, and value to create, i.e. new recovery mechanisms. It's a simple formula, but one that has led to success in the past. However, value is like beauty. It's in the eyes of the beholder, so time will tell if the market responds favorably. I can see such tremendous value in assets. It is much like shooting fish in a barrel. I do hope my confidence does not turn out to be a baseless bravado. However, I haven't failed yet, and do not expect not to succeed on this one. When building Nido, I knew be all about the Philippines and built the MC based on short weeks made up of very long days. CEB is different, as I do know a thing or two about Indonesia, and as I've said before, I have a great local team. You know, I love the one-line wisdoms, so we'll share with you yet another. I can see the future so clearly because I stand on the shoulders of giants. Look forward to chatting again. Take care. Cheers, D. And I replied to David, thanking him for the email and asked him permission to broadcast, and he replied as follows: yes, my pleasure. Yes, feel free to use the emails in your broadcasts if you feel they would be of interest to your listeners. I'll be in London towards the end of the month. Not sure where you are located, but would be great to catch up. Hope to meet as many of the interested shareholders and hoist a pint or two. I'm more of a end-of-bar kind of CEO, not the formal presser type. Hope this is appealing to the crew in London. Cheers, Dave. So there you go. If you're an investor in CEB Resources, then Dave's invited you to a pint at the end of a bar. And so once I get more information, I'll let you know. And I'm sure if you can, if some of you are based in London or you know some bars that be appropriate for a couple of pints with Dave, then let me know. And joining me on the podcast right now is Rodney Hobson, a financial speaker, writer, and author of investment books, including Shares Made Simple, The Beginner's Guide to the Stock Market. You all right, Rodney?
Yes, I'm doing fine.
How are you feeling at the moment? Are you feeling slightly bullish or bearish? Where is your mindset?
I'm still pretty bullish. I know that things haven't gone particularly well this summer. The old stock market adage, which I greatly scorn about selling may and go away, well, it could actually prove right this time because Certainly a lot of shares have fallen back since May, and there seems to be no real end to it. There's a lot of gloom hanging over the market. But on the whole, I still feel optimistic. I don't feel the shares are overvalued. I think, if anything, they're undervalued. The FTSE is still well below its previous record. I think that when we get into the autumn, we may well see a good whoosh in shares, and this time we'll have that other stock market adage. We'll have a Santa Claus rally. So on the whole, I'm pretty bullish that there's a lot of results come through that aren't bad at all.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the stats on that summer thing, I think it's 1 in 3 chance of that happening. So, you know, you are right to hold on in the summer anyways. 2/3 of the time, you're right. But also, when you think about it, if there is a bit of a correction in summer, then I think it's more likely then we have a rally towards the end of the year, because obviously, you know, there's more chance, probability is more chance that the stock's going up, because people, when prices come down a bit, you know, valuations are better, aren't they?
Absolutely right. Yes, and if you did sell in May and you got that bit right, you shouldn't be sitting back and thinking smugly how well you did. You should be thinking, now, is it time to get back into this market before it starts to recover again? I think there will be some more opportunities during the current month. But the other side of the adage, as we know, is that you buy back on St. Ledger Day, which is the second Saturday in September, I believe. I'm not a gambling man, but I think that's when it is. So shares could start to move soon. This could be the time to get in and pick up some bargains. I've still got about a third of my ISA allowance to invest this time, and I am looking round, and there are one or two possibilities I'm going to consider.
Yeah, I've noticed that, you know, I've been a bit of a contrarian player on Royal Dutch Shell and BHP Billiton. And I've noticed that they have hit their lows and they've started to rally a little bit. And into, you see a couple of brokers almost saying now, rather than saying sell, they're saying hold. And so I think we may have seen the bottom in the, for a little bit anyway. So I think there may be an upward tick, you know.
Yeah, that's fair enough, because although there's no great sign of a whoosh in oil prices or in commodity prices, I think they have finished falling. And when they finish falling, the stock market is very good at anticipating the next move. If, in fact, the next move is going to be some creeping up of prices, that will be factored into the share prices well before it actually happens. So you're quite right. I own shares in Shell, and I've stuck with them during the fall because I'm not too worried. I've had good dividends from Shell, and I've stayed with them. And I did, in fact, top up at a lower level, and it's one of the shares I'm looking at to consider whether to top up further. It's just that it's now quite a large part of my portfolio, and I don't like to get too overweight in just one or two stocks. On the other hand, if that's where the growth prospect is, why not go for it?
Yeah, well, that's what I've done. I'm really overweight in Shell completely, and you know, especially when the CEO came out, was it last week, I think, guaranteeing that, you know, almost 7% dividend or over 6% dividend for the next year up until 2016. I thought, well, listen, I'm happy to sit on close to 6.5% dividend for a year or so. You know, I don't mind accumulating that. And I've been looking at the chart here, and on a weekly chart here, there's something called the MACD is looking at. There's a convergence on those indicators, which in the past the shares have always done quite well after that convergence. So if it can hold here, I think we may see a steady climb in the next few months. So that's good. So when you look at shares, I mean, how do you initially look for a share? What is it that sticks out to you? Do you look at the metrics first, or what is it?
I don't look at anything fancy and complicated. I tend to write for unsophisticated investors, and I'm one myself. And I try to keep it simple. I don't look at share charts. On the whole, I think share charts and matrices and whatever and all these other fancy calculations are very much for people who invest short term and want to get in and out and choose the exact right moment to buy and sell. Very important for short term traders. I'm a long term trader, and to me, what is important is the fundamentals. If you're paying a dividend, and if there's hope that the dividend will rise, if there's a decent yield there, that to me is the first criterion. Are profits rising year by year? I think it's important. And if you want one other ratio, then the price earnings ratio is the one, because it does give you some sort of valuation of whether the shares look cheap or overpriced. Those are the basics. And for me, if you're a long-term investor, that's what to go for.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's look at some news out today, Rodney. What have you been looking at?
Yes, one or two good results and one or two not so good. I was greatly taken by Legal and General. Now, the insurance sector isn't a sector I've gone into particular, but if you want one in insurance, Legal and General has been a good, solid performer. It's once again produced double-digit growth in cash generation, in operating profits, and in the dividend increase. I think it's about the sixth year that it's managed to do that. Pre-tax profits in the first half up 18% to $672 million. Dividend goes up from 2.9p to 3.45p. Now, the shares have done pretty well over time, but in fact, they're one of the shares that have come back badly since March. They've dropped from 294 to 263p, and that fall has been overdone. And I think that this morning, even though the shares are up about a couple of percent when I last looked on these very good figures, strong growth in the UK and US, for example, that rise this morning doesn't mean it's too late to get in there. This is well worth looking at. Insurance companies seem to attract a lot of problems, and RSA has sort of come and gone in the public conscience, but Legal & General doesn't. Legal & General's solid, and that's my kind of company.
Yeah.
So that's well worth a look at from this morning.
They've got a strong upward trend, even though, like I said, like, you know, this temporary weakness in price is a good thing to take advantage of. I think they're 270 at the moment. They're up by 2.6%, so they're looking good.
270, but like I said, well, that's only a 7p rise on what are really very, very good figures.
Yeah.
So, as I say, not too late to take a look at that. And the other results which good this morning was the London Stock Exchange itself. Again, first half figures, operating profits up 16%, adjusted to normalise them up 27%. The shares have risen very, very strongly, one has to say, much more so than the Legal & General case. They were 1750p a year ago, they're now topside of 2700. So a lot of good news is in the price there, but I've got a feeling that LSE shares have not finished rising yet. And I have to say, anybody who bought a year ago, very well done, and I wouldn't rush to take profits.
Yeah, so how do you know when to, I mean, you're a long-term investor, so am I, but when do you know? This is always a tricky thing, because you'll often see magazines tipping companies. They very rarely tell you when to sell, because it's very hard to know, isn't it? I mean, is there ever a reason when you sell something, Rodney?
Only if things have turned bleak, but the point is, you don't know when to sell, and I don't think you should try to guess the market. Sensible thing to do is to look at how the company is going. Certainly, if you get a profit warning, it's probably sensible to sell out then. If things start to go wrong, you get some inkling of bad news, then yes, because one piece of bad news tends to follow another, and when a downturn comes, it gathers momentum. But I think on the whole, that as long as shares keep rising, I don't think there's cause to get out. Most investors, I suspect, are too ready to take their profits, and they live to regret it, and far too reluctant to admit when they got it wrong. If the share price keeps rising, I'm inclined to go with it. But you'll never guess absolutely right, spot on, because if we all knew where the top of the market was, then we'd all be selling out.
And do you know what? Some of my best performing shares, coincidentally or not coincidentally, are the shares I've held the longest. You know, I've ridden out some storms, and they've ended up, you know, ticking up faster after the correction than they did previously. And so, you know, there is this, I mean, you know, urgency these days to sell as soon as there's a worry in the market. But I think, as I said, you know, long term time in the market proves to be the best investment technique.
Yes, I mean, that point you've just made. Absolutely right. People do tend to sell out too quickly. The point is that you bought this company because you thought it was a good company, thought it was performing well, you thought the shares were going to rise. And now you've been proved right and the shares go up. Why on earth sell them? It's as if you're sort of admitting you got it wrong in some way. If it's worked so far, stay with it.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if they pay a dividend, you reinvest the dividends, because, you know, that's compound interest there, so to say.
Yes, indeed. That's
exactly.
Right, yeah. Well, on a less happy note, shall we move on to Standard Chartered?
Yeah, go on.
Their shares are up about 3% this morning, and I have no idea why. It's certainly true that they've taken a bit of a bashing. They're down from 1245p a year ago to below 1000p now. They have been in the recent past down below 900, which is where I think they should be. I just can't find any merit in Standard Chartered. I think I might actually prefer to invest in RBS, and that's saying something. So, I mean, Standard Chartered is that we've got a lot of worries about China, where Standard Chartered is strong. It's very much into emerging markets. You know, people always talk about emerging markets as if countries, underdeveloped countries, are suddenly coming forward and there's enormous growth that will go on for a long time. Emerging markets continue to disappoint over and over again. When we talked about BRICS, there's only China, really, of the BRIC countries done well. Then people talked about mints, which was the second line down. None of them have done well. It's an area where you disappoint. Standard Chartered's been done well in Asia in the past, but they were now taking impairment losses. They're writing down some of the loans. There's no sign of that reversing, as Standard Chartered itself admits. It's in the Middle East, which is very heavily dependent on oil, which is going to take some time to turn back again. It's very strong in Africa, which always persists in disappointing. One always hopes that Africa will come good one day, so rich in resources and so rich in despots that Africa never can. So Standard Chartered is not in the right sort of places at the moment. They have got a new chief executive, and I suspect that the reason why the shares rose this morning was that he's not actually called for a rights issue, which some people feared. On the other hand, he has slashed the dividend in half. I mean, what more warning do you want? A half dividend, that's not for me.
No, exactly. I mean, do you know what? I own Standard Chartered. I bought them at, I was looking at the chart, and I bought them just around about £9.05 a couple of months ago. And they rose to over 11 quid. I thought, oh, here we go. And they've grinded lower and lower. And last week, they jumped up about 10.50, and I sold them because I wanted to put some more in Royal Dutch Shell. And then I thought, hang on, let's have a think here. China, we've had enough warning signs now from China to start thinking, is there something more seriously going on wrong with China than we think? I know they push out this 7% GDP figure and they're saying, you know, everything's fine, but we are getting a lot of problems there. All the figures coming out seem to be weaker than normal, and I'm thinking, you know, we do a bit of an upset on China. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a real shocking figure come out of this sooner or later. And I think, you know, that's where, and that area, there's also Southeast Asia, is where they do a lot of their business. And I thought, do you know what? They're all slowing down the economies at the moment. And so I thought, do you know what? I'm jumping ship here, because the only reason why I was in there was to get a nice dividend. Really, and a bit of capital growth. And I thought there was rumours he was going to cut the dividend or go for a rights issue. So I thought, do you know what? I'm not interested. And I jumped out, and it has grinded lower. And
if you bought at 905, you certainly did very well. You got pretty well at the bottom of the market, and you've come out with a profit. But I mean, that's a good idea to look at things and decide if this has run its course. Yes, by all means, get out. It is, as we were saying earlier, a very difficult choice to make, and no one can be sure it's quite right. But yes, China, I'm not too downbeat about China, but we've had the best. Best of China, and that's the thing I think one has to face up to.
Marvellous. Any other thoughts, Rodney?
Yeah, just one other. If you think Standard Chartered's bad as I do, well, at least it's not as bad as for Expo, which really is the wrong product in the wrong place. This is a producer of iron ore. Again, they produced results today, revenues down, profits down. Unfortunately, most of the iron ore they've got is coming out of Ukraine, which has got problems all of its own. So that really is dreadful. Now, people may feel the shares were 140p last August. They're now down to about 55p. They took a really big dip at year-end, and they've sort of been bouncing along since. I think they've got much further down to go. This is a real horror story. I think that for Expo, anybody wants to read those results through rose-tinted spectacles, I'm afraid I think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, and we'll see. They seem to have hit a support at 50 pence, and they're at 58 now. We'll see if they go below that, because they are struggling to get off that level,
aren't
they?
Well, if they've got up to 58p, they're up a little on last night's close, which I think is absolute madness. But anyway, having had two companies there to complain about, let's get back to one more joyful set of figures. Ryanair once again is demonstrating that if you're nice to customers, as they suddenly discovered, things go well. Now, Ryanair doesn't do things by halves, and when they suddenly found out that trying to cut out all the things that annoyed people worked well, they've really gone from strength to strength. And this morning they announced that in July they carried 1 million more passengers than they carried in July last year. They've carried 10 million passengers in 1 month, and no airline's ever done that before. And they say rather gleefully that that's more than Aer Lingus carries in a whole year. Because you may recall that Ryanair tried to take over Aer Lingus and got blocked by the Irish government and by the European Union, and is now going to have to sell out its small stake there to IAG. But Ryanair can have a real gloat over this. And what is amazing to me is they're filling 95% of their planes. I mean, last July's performance of filling 4%, which is admittedly a pretty busy month with holidays and so forth, but to fill 95% of your plane, that's to be dreamt of. These are the really terrific figures. Now, once again, Ryanair shares have risen very heavily. They're priced in euros. They were €6.80 last October. They're now up to €12.81. So there's a lot of good news gone into that, but I think Ryanair is going to go on from strength to strength. Again, that's another one where it's a bit too pricey to go into now for my liking, but I think that other people will not see that, and if I were a shareholder, I would certainly be holding on to that one. I don't think it's time to get out yet.
Yeah, and I think capacity-wise, they only sell, I think the only space they've got now is standing room only in the toilets. I think that's all they've got.
Yes, I like that. Well, they are promising further improvements coming in this autumn. A new website. I know a lot of people complained about the website. It was difficult to navigate. So they're going to improve the website. They're improving the menus, so that might tempt more people to pay for a meal rather than sit and rumble their tummies, and they're also talking of lower fees. So it looks to me as if Ryanair is really making the most of the fall in fuel prices, passing a lot of good things on while they got chance. So that's why I feel that Ryanair still has further to go despite the very great rise in its share price.
Marvellous. Do you ever limit yourself on market cap? I mean, do you say I will not go below a certain size company, Rodney?
No, I don't believe when you're investing you should make hard and fast rules. You should decide what you want, certainly, and stick sensibly to it. But things like market cap size, no, I wouldn't do. I do tend to invest in larger companies, but I never look at the market cap of the company before I invest in it. I don't say, oh, that's too big or too small. No, if it's a good prospect, and I tend not to invest on AIM simply because a lot of AIM companies have struggled and a lot of have actually gone bust. But I wouldn't object to investing on AIM. It's perfectly fine by me if I think the company's good and it's producing good results. The market cap, I don't think, is important.
No, yeah, well, do you know what? There is a wealth advisory there, because, do you know, over the 20 years it's been around, 72% of investments on there have lost money. So, it's, you know, the odds are stacked against you, so you've got to be really sharp when you're picking stocks on it.
They are indeed. One needs to remember that about half of the companies AIM don't actually make a profit in any given year, and even fewer of them actually pay a dividend. So that is a big downer to me, and I do like companies that pay a dividend, because if the shares do fall, at least you've got some compensation back. So that is my big object. I would not buy any company on AIM that didn't make a profit, and probably wouldn't take any company that didn't pay a dividend or didn't look like paying a dividend soon. So that's the proviso for me, rather than the actual size of the company. I mean, the other consideration is that if there aren't all that many shares kicking around, there is always the danger that there's a big spread between the buying and selling price. It may be more difficult to sell. So that is a consideration, but that's a fairly minor consideration. If a company is going doing well and it will grow, then it's perfectly fine to buy into it. You'll find that it starts to become a bigger market cap as it grows, so much the better.
Yeah, do you know what? That's perfect advice. That's what I said recently. I said, if you're looking on companies on AIM, the way to avoid the bad companies is just go for companies that are making a profit and pay a dividend. Yeah. And I said, in that way, you will pick out some quality there. Marvellous. Lovely to talk to you, Rodney. You can follow Rodney on Twitter at Rodney Hobson. Speak soon, Rodney.
Yes, I'd like to do that again.
Time for the micro macro news. Here's the macro news. Global economic growth will slow this year to the lowest rate since the financial crisis, according to the National Institute of Economic and Social Research. The think tank cuts its 2015 forecast to 3% from 3.2% it predicted in May. It has cut growth forecasts for the US and many emerging market economies, although its forecast for the Eurozone has only been cut slightly. Its growth forecast for the UK economy is unchanged. Change at 2.5%. Do you know what? We are 6 years into a bull market. Bull market. And I'm thinking the bear's going to be showing his claws sooner or later, you know? Maybe not this year, maybe near the next end of next year. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know where I'm getting that from. Just complete guesswork. Having said that, doesn't stop economists doing the same. Growth in the UK services sector remains strong but slowed slightly in July, a survey from the market CIPS suggests. Its Purchasing Managers Index fell to 57.4 in July. That's from 58.5 in June. Of course, the figure above 50 still indicates growth. Below that is contraction. So 57.4, down from 58.5, is still high. Growth among European service businesses, which dominate most economies across the continent, eased last month as firms worried about Greece's flirtation with bankruptcy, survey showed. Still, Eurozone firms did accelerate growth towards the end of the month after Athens agreed a framework bailout plan with its European Union partners in mid-July, suggesting the bloc's economic recovery remains on track. And here's the micro news, here's the good news. Unite Group, it's UTG, ticker, which develops and manages student accommodation, posted a jump in first half pre-tax profit driven by high occupancy, rental growth, operational efficiencies and further growth to its portfolio. I've been hearing some good things about Unite, but you know what? Strong price, there's a chart there, strong uptrend. It's almost like waiting for that pullback that never happens, you know? London Stock Exchange Group almost doubled first half revenues thanks to the contribution of December acquisition of Russell Investments, with underlying growth of more than a modest 9% thanks to the encouraging performance of markets and data. Legal & General posted a 6% rise in first half pre-tax profits, an 18% increase in operating profit on the back of strong organic growth in the UK and US as it raised its interim dividend despite a fall in annuities. Collagen product manufacturer Devro, essentially, did they also make sausage skins? I like that. You imagine having a cracking business just making sausage skins. They posted a sharp increase in interim profit after reporting a strong hike in demand. Synergen, one of my Sunday stock picks, announced that it's entered into a research collaboration deal with Australian pharmaceutical company Pharmaxis. Filtronic revealed it had resolved a technical issue with its integrated wireless antenna product and hence won a follow-up order, and the share price up strongly today. Archon Tech swung to a pre-tax profit in the year ended June 30th on the back of cost savings and a new business from existing customers. Shares in Stratex surged after it said expected to complete construction of the Altıntepe gold mine in Turkey in August, with its first gold likely in the next few weeks. So I don't know if it's pronounced Altıntepe, but you say it with confidence and people believe you. Altıntepe. I have no idea. Here's the bad news. Standard Chartered slashed its interim and full-year dividend in half. That is a slash. The new guy, Bill Winters, come in. Admitted that very real challenges faced the bank. They also revealed pre-tax profit down by 44% compared to this time last year. I sold Standard Chartered last week because, or started this week, actually, because, you know, I think that there are some headwinds from the emerging economies where Standard Chartered's business are based. And even though that dividend is quite nice, there was rumours he was going to cut that and in fact, you know, go for a rights issue, but he hasn't done that. But, you know, dividend cutting in half, not a good sign. Spirent Communications warned that profits for the year will be materially below its expectations. That's not good when you read that, as it posted a pre-tax loss for the first half of the year. But I think this is their second major profit warning, maybe third. And as you say, you know, profit warnings come in threes. Forexpo posted a 42% fall in first half pre-tax profit, even though it's up 5% today. And StatPro reported a drop in first half profit and revenue on the back of continued product and cloud technology investment in line with expectations. Oil and gas explorer Soco International saw its interim pre-tax profit plunge as its revenue was more than halved on the back of a slump in oil prices. Here are the broker forecasts. Here are the upgrades. Barclays Capital has upgraded Cineworld Group to overweight. Oof, oh, poor body weight. To £5.80. Liberum Capital, they've upgraded Pendragon to buy. Price target 50. Hence. Now, they've also gone for a couple of miners here, but they've not given any target prices. Come on, guys. Put your money where your mouth is. But they've upgraded Glencore to hold, upgraded BHP Billiton to hold. And do you know what? BHP Billiton, I own those, and they're up strongly today. 5.1%, 12.18. They've also gone with upgrade to Rio Tinto to hold. And Credit Suisse upgraded Rolls-Royce Group to neutral. Price target £8.45. Here are the downgrades. Citigroup's downgraded Travis Perkins to neutral. Price target £23. Stifel. I think it's Stifel. I never heard of them before as a broker. Has downgraded Sinclair IS Pharma to hold. Price target 48 pence. And Berenberg has downgraded Thomas Cook Group to sell. Price target £1. That's it for the podcast. Apart from dedicating this podcast to Gordo Smith, who gave me a 5-star rating and this cracking review on iTunes. This is what he said. I started listening to the podcast as a complete novice. And after about 150 episodes, I now have a better understanding. Is it taking you 150? You can pretend to be an expert after one, let's be honest. But Gordon, I like that. I now have a better understanding of the kind of research required before making the decision to buy shares in a company. The variety of guests on the show is excellent, and Justin speaks in a language which connects the lingo and jargon with plain English of the novice. Thank you, Gordy. The Share Pickers emails, by the way, sign up to the newsletter, sharepickers.com to sign up to the newsletter, are also excellent, as it gives me a structured approach to my research. One thing I'd like to see covered in is regards to when to get out of a company and cash in. I get that you shouldn't set an upper limit, but there are still must be warning signs to say that it's run its race, all in good humour, which makes my drives far easier. A must for anyone wanting to learn or expand their knowledge in this area. Do you know what? I did chat to Rodney about selling. And you know what? It's very hard to know when to sell unless you put an absolute target, you know, on what you'd be happy with. Staying in that company for the long term normally proves to be the best option unless something changes within the company materially. So you've got to keep reading reports, you know. You have to get an interim report or full year report. Look at what they said or remember what they said the year before. And if anything changes, there's something, hang on a sec, this wasn't said in the last report, or I'm sure this company was a lot more bullish in the last report. So if a situation changes or market changes, then it's time to get out. But, you know, if a company's paying a good dividend, then generally, the longer you can hold on to a company that still makes good profits, then the better you'll do, you know. And I think, like I said, Rodney said, too many people are quick to sell for a quick profit when they can get a big profit for running it. Run the profits, run your winners, you know, cut your losers. That's what some people say. But I mean, I also think you shouldn't cut losers sometimes. If you bought, you can't get the timing exactly right. So you should wait for a while, you know, because if it's a good company fundamentally, long term, the time in that company will serve you well. Hope that makes a bit of sense, but much as appreciatos, the rating review there, Gordo. This podcast is dedicated to you. And don't forget, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation in the podcast. It's only just opinion. Please do your own research. Thank you for listening. Sign up to the newsletter if you can, and give me a review on iTunes if you can. Up to 65 reviews now on the iTunes, all 5 stars, and I do really appreciate that. Thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADBFN Podcast with Justin Waite.